and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris. Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. As we mark World Children's Day on the 20th of November, which is a day to celebrate or commemorate the innocence, the potential and the rights of children across the globe, let's keep in mind today the children of Gaza. Now, as we speak, more than 5,000 children in Gaza have been killed by Israeli bombardments, with some 1,800 children missing under the rubble of destroyed buildings, presumed dead. And the question is, what will happen to the children who survive this war? What is their future going to be like? Joining us now is Datuk Dr. Ahmad Faizal Muhammad Perdaus. He is president of Mercy Malaysia. Dr. Faizal, thank you for being on the show today. And I read somewhere that a child, a 15-year-old child in Gaza today, has lived through five wars since 2008. I'm wondering what this particular war might have, what impact this might have on children these past 6 weeks of non-stop bombardments.
Thank you, Melissa. So I'll go straight into the points. How wars and conflicts like this, especially this particular one, affects children in Gaza. And after that, I'll go back to your 15-year-old. So first of all, the direct impact of this horrendous, indiscriminate bombing that we've seen, and bombardment, if you like, not just bombing from above, but also with artillery and missiles and rockets, whereby more than 40% of the total casualty list our children, which is unheard of. And this is the highest toll in recent conflict history. Yeah, since 2019, this has been the highest number of children killed in all conflicts around the globe, including the Ukraine-Russia war. And so the direct impact, of course, is, as we've seen on our television screen, sadly, the deaths, but also the injuries. So the injuries, physical injuries, directly affecting children, which is totally intolerable, if you ask me, because there's no reason why children should be killed or injured in the first place. But to have thousands of them killed and injured, over 30% of the 30,000 over now who are injured are children, as well as 40% of those who are dead. And so the direct impact of physical injuries, of course, can be long-lasting. And some of them can even be debilitating, and will affect how the child grows, what he or she will be able to do in the future, etc. Secondly, is the indirect impact of this current conflict, whereby not just bombs and missiles are falling, but also the lack of medicine, lack of food, lack of water as a result of the total blockade. So some children, and we've seen already in the hospitals, in Al-Shifa and others, children as small as premature babies in incubators are dying. And again, this is horrendous, because again, children are not only dying immediately, if you like, as soon as they are killed by bombs or missiles, but they're also dying because of injuries that are left untreated or not treated optimally. They're also dying because of lack of food, lack of fuel to the hospitals which can treat them, especially for children who are not directly injured by the actual conflict, yeah? And just like adult patients with chronic disease, there are also children with chronic disease, cancer, asthma, etc., who now lack medication because of the total blockade, and they also are dying. The third one is something which I think most of us know at the back of our minds, but perhaps for those of us here in Malaysia, we're not very familiar with this, except whenever we have acute natural disasters, which is, of course, the mental health and psychosocial impact on these children, both directly after having suffered injuries themselves or having seen very close family members injured or killed, but also by the entire situation of seeing people tormented, terrorized, etc., etc. The impact, again, will be long-lasting, and as well as immediate. And we will find soon that children will be in depression, And 6 months from now, there will be children who will be exhibiting symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorders, although this is mainly diagnosed in adults. Yeah. And this is going to be an epidemic by itself. Fourthly, we must remember that the war and the current conflict has meant that over 90% of the children in Gaza are left without education. There are small pockets of those in the south who are still able to access some education in some of the UNRWA schools, but these are a very small minority. The vast majority are now displaced. They are without education. Education, of course, is a right, Melissa, under the Declaration of the Rights of the Child and under the International Convention on the Rights of the Child. Education is a right. And today, of all days, on 20th of November, this is the World Children's Day today. And today we find that the children in Gaza are not only traumatized by injuries and by mental health trauma, but also by denial to their education. And of course, last but not least, is the social impact that may be linked to mental health, but also may not be directly, the social impact of being separated from their families, from their parents. For those who lose their parents, but they survive, things may not be as bad as those who are killed, perhaps, to some of us. But if you imagine how this child will then lead his or her life going forward without his or her parents, that may not necessarily be the case. And in some cases, unfortunately, it may be worse for them. And so going back to your 15-year-old who's seen four, now five wars, and if he or she survives this one, he or she at the moment, unless by the grace of God, he or she has access again to a good family, to good education, to a normal home after this, he or she will grow up in deprivation, but also, I would say, he or she will also grow up with perhaps some injury, some debilitation perhaps, and more importantly, I think for the whole region to understand, he or she will probably grow up being very bitter and very angry as well.
I read that there's a new acronym being used by medical workers, WCNSF, Wounded Child, No Surviving Family. Dr. Faisal, can I ask you about the situation in Gaza when you talked about children being left as orphans with no family to turn to? Compare that to the other crises that Mercy Malaysia has responded to. In terms of impact to children, what will become of them when we think about the long-term impact? I'm asking you, for the children who have survived this war up to today, what does the future look like for them?
Well, Melissa, I must say that unless a peaceful, just, amicable, reasonable, political, diplomatic, and practical solution is found to the Palestinian issue, to the Palestinian crisis as a whole, the future of the children with this current situation looks very bleak. Why? Because we are not just talking about, like we just said, the physical wounds, yeah? But now we're also talking about the fact that they'll be without families, without loved ones, without people who support them directly. They'll be dependent on state organs, on the UN, for example, to provide for them, and we must remember this is not just any other place. Yeah, just contrast this to the also very major conflict we have in the Ukraine between Russia and Ukraine, whereby massive support is available for Ukrainian refugees, especially last year, 2022. When the war broke out, and we have a situation whereby, although it is estimated that hundreds of thousands have died, the majority, the vast majority of those who have been killed are actually combatants in that particular war. A minority have been civilians, most of whom have been on the Ukrainian side, and a very small proportion of them have been children. And so you would see that the vast majority of children in that conflict would still grow up and have a chance of being cared for and being nurtured and having opportunities still, especially if the war ends. Yeah. Here in Gaza, though, without that just peaceful, amicable, practical solution to the Palestinian issue, and here is where the whole world must take responsibility, including all of us in our own small ways, these children are left to face a bleak future that is likely to repeat itself in a few years' time. We're actually just waiting for the next conflict between Israel and Gaza or Israel and Palestine to occur, if there's no wholesome solution.
Dr. Faisal, how does it make you feel to hear children being described as collateral damage?
Melissa, like I said, I just gave you the example of the Ukraine war, yeah? And yes, there have been atrocities as well there, and in other conflicts, like we have now in Sudan as well, a conflict, internal conflict between rival parties in Sudan. We had in Yemen as well. When we talk about collateral damage, there are three principles in international humanitarian law. One is the principle of self-defense. The other is the principle of proportionality. And lastly is the principle of the responsibility to protect. Yeah, and so with regards to self-defense, I think we can all accept a certain level of collateral damage if we were to remain neutral in any conflict and look at it with neutral eyes. We would expect some number of civilian casualties, some number of bystander casualties, but over 40% of the total casualties, that's not collateral damage by any standards. That's almost impossible to understand and to fathom. And it is almost impossible to accept that that is collateral damage. The only way the numbers go up to 40% is if there's been either indiscriminate fighting and shelling and bombing, or unfortunately intentional bombing with the intention to terrorize.
Dr. Faisal, thank you so much for joining me on the show. That was Dr. Ahmad Faisal Muhammad Firdaus from Mercy Malaysia. We're going to take a quick break here and consider this. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Hi, welcome back to Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. In a speech delivered on November 6th by United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres, he said, quote, "Gaza is becoming a graveyard for children," end quote. So this year's World Children's Day weighs heavy on our collective conscience, given the catastrophic child casualties in Gaza to date. Joining me now is UNICEF spokesperson Toby Fricker. Toby, thank you for being on the show tonight. I'm wondering whether you can share with us, or what can you tell us about the current situation in Gaza regarding the impact on children amidst all the ongoing assaults?
Yeah, no, thank you. I mean, it's really a tragic situation. It's a very sad, let's say, World Children's Day. Because we've seen now, you know, nearly 5,000 children have reportedly been killed, many thousands others injured. We have children who were killed inside Israel, children who are still being held as hostages as well, who need to be released immediately. But the situation for children, it's horrific. I mean, there's no place safe in the Gaza Strip for children right now. We've seen in the last 48 hours strikes at UN schools where people have been sheltering to try and get some form of safety. We have 1.6 million people, including 800,000 children, who have been displaced to other parts of the Gaza Strip, mainly in the south. And they're staying in shelters like schools, public grounds, hospital grounds to try and find safety. But the conditions are horrific because you have very densely populated rooms. You have classrooms, which should be classrooms for children to learn, but are now packed with families. The sanitation conditions are very bad. The access to water is very low. So it's about 3 liters per person per day, which is way below the 15 liter emergency threshold that we try to reach. And we're very concerned about the outbreak of diseases now, waterborne diseases, other diseases, vaccination rates have plummeted. We have winter approaching today. It's very, very cold and raining. So the conditions are just getting worse, which is why it's so critical that we scale up this life-saving aid as quickly as we can.
Right. So we've been reading reports of dozens of premature babies, who are in critical condition at Al-Shifa Hospital, having been evacuated to south of the Gaza Strip. What do you know, Toby, about the many other children who are injured, who require medical aid? What are the most pressing medical needs for children in Gaza at this moment?
Yes, I mean, the Al-Shifa Hospital tragically became this sort of center almost of the war zone, which in itself is horrific. We managed yesterday to work with our UN partners and others to move these 31 premature babies to a hospital in the south where they're getting better medical care, where it's a little bit safer, and their conditions being stabilized, which has been, you know, a very small piece of positive news, let's say, among sort of many, many tragedies. And children have received and been victims of, you know, horrific maiming and injuries, and they're trying to get the care, but the hospitals are overwhelmed. You have 2/3 of hospitals have shut down due to damage or lack of fuel, and this is at a time of crisis when you need every hospital working because there are so many injuries, particularly among children and civilians. And we've seen children who have been carried to hospital without family members, people saying we don't know where the family member is, where the parents are. And so this is another huge concern that we have potentially thousands of unaccompanied separated children.
All right. So that new acronym that medical workers in Gaza are using, the wounded child, no surviving family, is a horrible situation for any child to be in. Can I also ask you about the unborn children? So among Gaza's population, of course, are people who are pregnant. I think there are about 160 deliveries taking place every day. When we think about the medical needs for newborn babies, how are women giving birth in this war zone?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, for pregnant women and women giving birth now, I mean, it's really a horror, you know, particularly for women. Then, you know, if you have medical complications, you need that support. Getting that is incredibly difficult with the healthcare system on the brink of collapse. We spoke to a pregnant lady just a few days back who had to make the journey from northern Gaza to the south with her children. And she's 7 months pregnant. And she spoke of the horrors. The children spoke of the horrors of seeing dead bodies, of that 6-hour, 7-hour walk south, which was a journey through hell, as they described it. And this is for a pregnant woman. So that's why, you know, the medical facilities, we need to bring in more fuel to keep the operations running. We need to bring in more medical supplies so the doctors, nurses and others can do the job that they need to do, because they're under such strain in terms of the injuries of children, civilians, but also the, you know, everyday health conditions, everyday health responses, which continue, of course, inside the Gaza Strip. But giving birth right now is incredibly dangerous, let's say, and becoming more so, particularly when you need specific medical support for complications that may arise.
So what can I, what is UNICEF recommending, Toby, to address these immediate needs of children affected by this conflict? As you mentioned, also winter just around the corner.
Yeah, I mean, well, number one is children need to be better protected. You know, as the hostilities continue, all parties to the conflict have an obligation to protect children, to protect civilians. Secondly, we need to massively scale up the amount of humanitarian aid we can bring inside the Gaza Strip. So trucks are coming in, but it's nowhere near enough given the immense needs. Even before this crisis, the Gaza Strip had huge needs in terms of resources, bolstering resources for hospitals, water, sanitation as well. So what we're trying to do urgently is make sure the shelters get are better cared for, so we improve the conditions in the shelters for children, particularly young children who are exposed to the elements, to the cold elements. They're exposed to potential disease outbreaks, particularly as the safe water is very limited. You're seeing these waterborne disease potential, and if something spreads, it will spread very quickly because people are living so closely together. Mm-hmm. So what's urgent is that we can scale up the access to safe water. UNICEF has a desalination plant that produces safe water, and we are trucking it around, but we need more fuel to do that. We need it to be safer to do that as well. But we're trying to get that to the shelters as quickly as possible to at least alleviate some of the suffering there, particularly, like you said, as the winter approaches, the cold, the rain, which could further spread disease, and water sources could become even more contaminated than they are already.
Toby, can I ask you, based on your work in other conflict zones, what do you think will happen to the children who survive this war?
Well, I mean, for the children who have lived through this, you know, now like more than 40 days of horror, that obviously has a massive impact on their mental well-being, their mental health, and will take years to recover from. And I, you know, in most conflicts, what we try to do is keep children, you know, could children still go to school? Can we get psychosocial support to children? Inside the Gaza Strip, we can't do any of that right now because all schools are shut. 625,000 children of school going age are out of school. Schools are being used as shelters. The education system has been all but destroyed. So there's no normalcy. There's nothing. You know, we're doing some recreational activities for children in the shelters. So like for an hour or so, they can try and forget about the horrors around them. But that needs to be, again, massively scaled up. We need to have mental health professionals working with these children as quickly as we can, because it has both immediate and long term impacts. We've had staff, UNICEF staff, whose children have been resorting to self-harm, like ripping their hair, scratching their thighs, because they're in such distress day in, day out. And we need to, you know, provide the support that these children urgently need. So the long-term impact can be massive as well in terms of that mental well-being.
I also want to better understand how, so when it comes to the rules of war, are children protected? How do we think about protecting children during violence, during armed conflict?
Yeah, so I mean, yeah, UNICEF, our role as a humanitarian agency is to remind all parties to the conflict about their obligations to protect children and civilians during hostilities, during war. And that is absolutely critical. And they have an obligation to do that. All parties have an obligation to best protect children as best they can. So hospitals have, you know, special protection, of course, because they're treating injured children, injured civilians. And this is something that we've been reminding time and time again to all parties to adhere by their obligations to do that. And that includes also scaling up the amount of aid that comes inside the Gaza Strip so we can move that around to help alleviate the suffering in anywhere in the Gaza Strip, not selective areas, but anywhere where children are in need. And we can continue doing that with the UN, with other partners who have been working with all parties to try and, you know, push for this adherence to international humanitarian law.
That was Toby Fricker, UNICEF spokesperson, wrapping up this episode of Consider This. I'm Alyssa Idris, signing off for the evening. Thank you so much for watching, and good night.